Hello and welcome to the reading of the Courier, the e-edition, for Thursday, November 30th. I am your narrator, Peter Welch, and you are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Services Network for the blind and the disabled. So, hi everybody, we are practically there. December, oh boy, Christmas is coming down the pike faster than we probably even wanted to, but it's coming. So, let's take a look and see what we have. Speaking of Christmas, I'm looking at an article here. There's a huge banner headline that says, "Let There Be Lights." And there's a photograph here. It says the Hickory Hills Campground in LaPorte City has some extra color as displays are being set up for the Hickory Hills Holiday Light Show. All right, let's see what it says. Drive-through displays benefit House of Hope, Blackhawk County Conservation. Even the Grinch would find something to smile about on a drive-through dazzling community holiday light displays. Many metro area neighborhoods will be getting their shine while the night sky will sparkle as large public displays flip the switch on a light-filled Christmas. On Friday, House of Hope Festival of Lights and Hickory Hills Holiday Light Show will highlight the nights for the coming week. So fill the hot chocolate mug and climb into the old four-wheel sleigh for a leisurely drive through the magical glow of twinkling lights. This year's House of Hope Festival of Lights takes place at Lost Island KOA Resort, and they're located at 4550 LaPorte Road in Waterloo. And the hours are from 6 to 8 p.m., December 3rd, 8, 10, and 15 and 17. On Fridays and Saturdays, the festival is a drive-through, while on Sunday, visitors will park their vehicles for a walk-through-only experience. This is the fourth annual event, said Development Director Dusky Steele. We're back and bigger. We started the light show in 2020 because we had to figure out a creative way to do fundraising during the pandemic, she said. The reaction was awesome, so we decided to keep doing it. Cost is $20 per vehicle, no matter how many people you squeeze into the car, Steele said. Admission can be paid at the entrance or tickets purchased in advance online at houseofhopeccd.charity, P-R-O-U-D, proud, okay, .org/event registration/index13611. Let me say that again because I know that's kind of a mouthful. Again, it is House of Hope ECCD, all one word, .charityproud.org/event registration/index13611. Proceeds fund House of Hope efforts to provide single mothers and women aging out of foster care with housing, as well as holistic programming and also access to services and resources to achieve independence and permanent homes. The organization receives no state or federal aid. While driving through the displays, families can enjoy complimentary hot chocolate and cookies, as well as watch for Santa Claus. The walkthrough experience will be more interactive with Christmas carolers and s'mores station and an opportunity to talk to Santa. Along the way, visitors can vote for their favorite display. Last year, Waterloo Fire Rescue won with a display featuring a fire truck and Grinch theme. About 2,000 vehicles toured the light show in 2022, Steele said. And there is a picture here on page 5. There's a shot of a fire truck. It says, "Waterloo Fire Rescue's lighted fire truck was the fan favorite at the 2022 House of Hope Holidays Light Festival." So, you know what? That really sounds like a lot of fun, helping to get into the Christmas mood, right? All right, let's see what else we got here. Barber duo hanging up their shears after 50 years. In Waterloo, it's often said that the best new tips come out of barbershops and beauty salons. But the biggest breaking news from one hallowed homegrown hair heaven hails from the cutters, not the clientele. Two local barbers with a combined century of snipping are hanging up their clippers. Werner Meyer and Eddie Halverson, co-owners of Zarif's Barbershop at Ridgeway Plaza, are retiring. They've been cutting hair for most of their 50-plus year careers at the shop and have owned the place for more than 20 years. Both recently attended the funeral of the boss, friend, mentor, founder of their business, Jim Zarif's, who died in August. His loved ones welcomed Meyer and Halverson like family. Their old friend's passing brought things full circle for Meyer and Halverson, who in turn are now passing on the business to an up-and-comer in their vocation, Andrew Brimmer, who runs Reflections Hair Salon at LaPorte Road, will take over operations of Zarif's Barbershop under the same name and the same location. Brimmer is a 2020 Waterloo West High graduate who grew up on the neighborhood in and around Ridgeway Plaza and attended barber school at the Salon Professional Academy in Cedar Falls. And he's looking forward to operating a traditional barbershop with an established clientele to complement the younger client base he serves at Reflections. Well, that's nice. The tradition continues on, and I think that's kind of nice. There's a picture of the two gentlemen. It's Werner Meyer seated and Eddie Halverson have each worked at Zarif's Barbershop in Waterloo for more than 50 years and owned it for more than 20 years. Hey, that's a lot of hair to cut, isn't it? Okay, all right, let's move on to the next page here of our paper here. Looking at a photo here, there's a construction continues on a new Casey's location at the corner of First Street and Hudson Road in Cedar Falls. Casey's under construction at First Street, Hudson Road in Cedar Falls. The end result will be Cedar Falls 60 Casey's convenience, or excuse me, I should say 6th Casey's convenience store. With 4,500 square feet of space and four gas pumps, spokesperson Katie Petru confirmed over the email. She said that the new store at 1620 West First Street and 120 Hudson Road will not replace any of the others already open in the area. The new store is accessible from the west by Genevieve Street and sits near Godfather's Pizza, the Iowa State Patrol District Number 9 office, and a plaza including Alphaletco Physical Therapy and Sidecar Coffee Shop. And may the company's subsidiary Cedar Pack LLC acquired the 0.85-acre lot with a vacant office building it later demolished for $556,500, according to the property records. The store will have a kitchen offering out our homemade pizza using made-from-scratch dough and other quality ingredients, as well as prepared food items like burritos, sandwiches, and bakery items, Petro wrote. This Casey also will offer our full convenience offering of packaged beverages, snacks, and other essentials. O come Emmanuel. And there is a picture of two people holding candles, singing. Wartburg celebrates 77th annual Christian concert this weekend in Waverly. This year's Christmas with Wartburg theme has been percolating in Lee Nelson's imagination for the last 7 years. Emmanuel, God with Us is theme for the 77th annual holiday concert, with performances at 3 and 7:30 p.m. Saturday and 3 p.m. Sunday in Newman Auditorium on the Wartburg College campus. A 7:30 p.m. performance takes place on Friday at Lutheran Church of Hope in West Des Moines. We refresh the concept each year, looking at the Christmas story with a new lens. It's familiar yet fresh. I've thought about this theme for a long time. I love how it explores how the divine is with us in joy and also in sorrow and in suffering and in celebration, said artistic director Nelson. The concert theme reimagines the Advent hymn, O Come Emmanuel, scored for mass choirs, orchestra, band, and organ. It tells the Christ story in such a way that connects with humanity and really awakens us, Nelson explained. The experience is a beautiful marriage of music, the spoken word, and an original piece of art designed just for the concerts. The program features more than 300 students from the Wartburg Choir, the Castle Singers, Wind Ensemble, and Kammer Streicher Chamber Orchestra, as well as the Ritker St. Elizabeth Choral, Cantori, and Handbell Choir. My goodness, that's a lot of people. The opening will be particularly powerful, Nelson says. It's one of the most, a student says, epic openings we've ever done. It has a very movie-like feel to it that sounds more akin to The Lord of the Rings than a Christmas concert. So, wow, that really sounds like a lot of fun to go to. Let's see, what else do we have going on here in Waterloo? Since its inception 5 years ago, the Waterloo Youth City Council has had success advocating for teen mental health issues. Statewide recognition led to an opportunity to create a series of public service announcements in partnership with NRG Media, the Waterloo Career Center, and KWWL-TV. They aired on radio and television during the spring and the summer. Now the group's efforts have been further validated with a regional Emmy Award. Regional Emmys differ from the national awards, but are also given out by the Academy of Television, Arts, and Sciences. Iowa's in the Upper Midwest region, one of 19 across the U.S. The Upper Midwest Emmy Awards ceremony, where the students win over two other nominees, was announced, happened on the 14th of October in Bloomington, Minnesota. When we sat down with the kids to work on the scripts for the PSAs, there were two points they wanted to make sure people knew about, said Mike Waters from NRG Media, which owns radio stations in the Waterloo and Cedar Rapids markets. First were how many teens are affected by mental health issues. Second, they wanted to make sure that teens had a way to get in touch with mental health services. I've also forgot to read the headline. The point of this article is that the Waterloo City Council has won the regional Emmy Award. Members of the Youth Council worked with KWWL to create the concept and television spots with the Career Center to produce the PSAs. Digital media instructor Matt Dunkerton explained how the Career Center was able to help the Youth Council and advisor Carol Luce with the project. I think this was a wonderful experience for all who got to participate in it. I was pleasantly surprised to learn about the award the project received, he said in an email. I loved Carol's determination and drive and focus as she guided students to create something they believed would impact and benefit our community and beyond. All right, I am turning the page here. Let's see it out. See what else we've got here in the e-edition of the Courier today. Iowa LGBTQ students sue over a new state law. School book students preferred pronouns restricted by new law. In Des Moines, seven Iowa students are named as plaintiffs in a federal lawsuit filed Tuesday that challenges a new sweeping state law that places restrictions on LGBTQ students and school materials. The ACLU of Iowa joined two law firms in filing a lawsuit challenging Iowa Senate File 496, which prohibits the instructions of gender identity and sexual orientation through sixth grade, prohibits books with descriptions of sex acts, and requires parental notification when a K-12 student wants to be referred to by a different pronoun or name in school. The law was passed by Republican state lawmakers and signed into law in May by Republican Governor Kim Reynolds. The lawsuit asks the court for an immediate halt to enforcement of the law during the legal challenge. Attorneys said that the lawsuit argues that the state law violates the First Amendment right to free speech of Iowa's LGBTQ students and asked the court to find the entire law unconstitutional. The students are identified in the lawsuit only by initials, and some chose to speak Tuesday at a news conference hosted by the ACLU of Iowa. Like it or not, sex and sexuality are parts of the teenage experience. Refusing to provide adolescents with information about it means they'll seek out their own information from the internet or from others in ways that are significantly less safe than books. Reviewed by teachers and librarians, Puck Carlson, a senior from Iowa City, who was one of the seven student plaintiffs, said Tuesday in a statement read during an online news conference, "Removing books that discuss queer topics of people from schools tells our creative students that they do not belong there and that they are shameful. I am not shameful." The federal lawsuit was filed in the Southern District of Iowa. The ACLU of Iowa, Lamboda Legal, and the law firm Jenner and Block are representing the seven students in Iowa State Schools, a nonprofit that advocates for LGBTQ students in Iowa. The state law is a clear violation of public school students' First Amendment rights to speak, read, and learn freely, ACLU of Iowa lawyer Thomas Story said during the news conference. The First Amendment does not allow our state or our schools to remove books or issue blanket bans on discussion and material simply because a group of politicians or parents find them offensive. A similar law in Florida was unsuccessfully challenged in federal court. Lawyers representing the plaintiffs in Iowa said that they believe that the outcome will be different here. They pointed to other cases in other states where courts did intervene, but the cases they noted involved higher education or public libraries, not K-12 schools. We are committed to continuing to challenge any restrictions on students' speech, whatever they appear and wherever they appear. These latest attacks are just another chapter, said Nathan Maxwell, a senior attorney with Lombada Legal, which is helping to represent the plaintiffs. "We think that the Iowa law is so clearly unconstitutional as it is written and as it's applied, and we're very confident in our case. We expect the courts will agree with us." State House Republican leaders issued statements on Tuesday defending the new state law that they passed, with some of them arguing that pornography should not be in Iowa schools. Waterloo student part of a suit challenging LGBTQ law. West High transgender teen leads the school's gender sexuality group. In Waterloo, a Waterloo High School student is one of several students who are part of a lawsuit challenging the state law that silences LGBTQ students and restricts books in public schools. Attorneys for Lombada Legal and ACLU of Iowa and the law firm Jenner and Block LLP filed a lawsuit Tuesday in federal court to block provisions of SF-496, saying it seeks to erase any recognition of LGBTQ people from public schools. Percy Batista Pedro, age 16, a transgender West High School junior who is president of the school's Gender Sexuality Alliance, and mother Belinda Scarrett are plaintiffs in the suit. "I am scared of being harassed if I wear pride apparel or if I talk about my identity in class. This fear, which is shared by my transgender friends, is why I have chosen to be a plaintiff in this case," Batista Pedro said in a prepared statement. During his freshman year, Batista Pedro was performing a play in middle school. A student in the crowd threatened to shoot him, calling him out by name, according to the lawsuit. The incident was reported to the police, but as far as he knows, no action was taken. "I believe the student knew me because of a protest I had staged earlier that year at my high school. Now, after SF-496 and the climate it has created to shame and invite violence against transgender people, I would be terrified of organizing another protest," Batista Pedro said. "Transgender youth should not have to live in fear at their schools. We should not have to take unnecessary steps to gain the respect of being called by the correct name and pronouns that no cisgender kid ever has to ask for. And the other little piece on this says that the law does require teachers and counselors and school psychologists and other staff to report students to their parents or guardians if a student asks to be referred to by names or pronouns that align with their gender identity. Former HCC student charged for not returning laptop in Waterloo. A former community college student has been arrested for allegedly keeping a school-issued computer after he quit classes. Waterloo police arrested apprentice J.E. Hackett, age 29, on the 23rd of November on one count of second-degree theft. Bond was set at $5,000. According to court records, Hackett began classes at Hawkeye Community College and checked out a laptop computer valued at $1,695 for the industrial maintenance programs in January of 2023. 9 days later, he quit going to classes and apparently didn't return the laptop. Then in September, he attempted to pawn the computer at a local pawn shop. The store contacted Hawkeye Community College about the attempt, and the school went to the police about the missing computer. All right. What else do we have going on here? All right. I have now turned to the Northeast Iowa area escapades, and there is a bunch of stuff here. Let's take a look. Lots to do now that we have all but officially entered into the Christmas holiday season. On the 7th of December, that's a Thursday, celebrate Celtic Women Christmas. The beloved Celtic Women group will perform a holiday concert at 7 p.m. Thursday in the Catherine Cassidy Gallagher Great Hall at the Gallagher Blue Dorn Performing Arts Center in Cedar Falls. A limited number of tickets remain available, from $46 for adults and from $38 for youth, available online. And here is where you can go if you do go online. www.unitix, that's UNITIX, .uni.edu. Or you can also call them if you want at 319-273-7469. I'll say that again, 319-273-7469. Or you can go to the box office, which is temporarily located in the Strayerwood Theater on the University of Northern Iowa campus. All right, what else do we have here? Now through 2024, Bosnian exhibit open at Grout. The new Who We Are Bosnians in the Cedar Valley exhibit is now open at the Grout Museum at 505 South Street in Waterloo. Many refugees settled in Iowa as a result of the Bosnian War in the 1990s and brought their unique culture to the Cedar Valley and surrounding areas. The exhibition also will feature the work of artist Peko Rozic. The Grout is open. The Grout is open from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday, and there is an admission fee. And then on the 2nd of December, which is a Saturday, have pancakes with Santa. Breakfast with Santa, a holiday hoopla event, takes place on Saturday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. at the Cedar Falls Community Center at 528 Main Street. The menu features pancakes and syrup, sausage, juice, tea, and coffee. Tickets are $7 in advance, available at the communitymainstreet.org or $8 at the door. Tickets are required for anyone eating, regardless of age. Let's see. What else do we have here? Friday, the 1st of December through December 3rd, which is on a Sunday, Yubi the Elf comes to town. Harry Connick Jr. is the Happy Elf. Will be on the Oster Regent Theater stage for a holiday run. This weekend's performance are 7 p.m. Friday and 2 p.m. Saturday and Sunday at the theater, 103 Main Street, the Cedar Falls Community Theater. Music, which is all directed by Kim Graniga. Tickets are $27 for adults and $12 for youth. They are available online at, and I'm going to spell this for you, myCFCT.org/V-happy-elf Elf. And also you can go to the box office, or you can call at 319-277-5283. And then on Thursday, November 30th, through Sunday the 3rd, Disney's, this is The Little Mermaid, by the way, Disney's fish tale about a mermaid who longs to live in the world above, The Little Mermaid, ends its run this weekend at the Waterloo Community Theater. Performances are at 7 p.m. tonight and Friday, and 2 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday at the Hope Martin Theater in the Waterloo Center for the Arts at 225 Commercial Street. Tickets are $25 for adults, $10 for children. And they're also available at the Waterloo Center for the Arts box office at 225 Commercial Street. Or you can also call 319-291-4494. Or you can go online at www.wepbhet.org. Tonight's show is a Pay What You Can performance. All right, let's move on here. Friday the 1st of December to December 7th, you and I Min Glee Club to entertain. The 46th Annual Christmas Variety Show for featuring the University of Northern Iowa Varsity's Men's Glee Club is Saturday. The performances will be at 7:30 p.m. on Friday, 2:30 and 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, and at the Gallagher Blue Dorn Performing Arts Center in Cedar Falls. Tickets are $15 for adults. Children under 12 are $1. Limit 2 with purchase of one adult ticket. Students 12 and up are $5. And what would Christmas be without the Grinch? Oh, yes. Friday, the 1st of December, there's a big picture here of the Grinch in his Santa Claus outfit with his, his fiendish-looking smile. I'm sure that we're also very well familiar with. So on Friday, the 1st of December, discover Grinchmas at Grout. Merry Grinchmas is the theme for Friday's Discovery Days from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Grout Museum, 503 South Street, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday during Discovery Days. There will be hands-on activities and crafts around all things Grinch. Discovery Days activities are drop-ins and free with admission. Grout admission is $15 for adults, $8 for veterans, and children 4 through 13, children 3 and under, and museum members are free. And then you've also got here Saturday, December 2nd, Get Merry at the Market. Area boutiques, pop-up shops, and more will participate in Merry at the Market on Saturday with handcrafted items, Christmas decorations, and home decor for sale. The event is from 8 a.m. to noon at the Waterloo Convention Center, and they're located at 200 West 4th Street. Admission is $20. Proceeds benefit the Family and Children's Council. On Saturday, December 2nd, share list with Santa. Children can share their Christmas wish list with Santa on Saturday at Anton's Garden, 1202 Sycamore Street, Waterloo. Santa will be there from 1 to 3 p.m. Everyone is welcome to share their list and take a photo with the jolly old elf. The event is hosted by Main Street, Waterloo. And also then on Saturday, the 2nd of December, Hartman hosts family-friendly outing. Explore Hartman Reserve Nature Center's Woodland Wonderland on Saturday. The family-friendly event includes holiday-inspired activities, visits with Santa, backup reindeer, and photo ops with the popular holiday characters. There are two sessions, one from 4 to 5 p.m., a second from 5 to 6 p.m. The cost is $9 for adults, $6 for children, and free for children 1 and under. Registration is required online at Hart, and I'm going to spell this for you, HARTMANRESERVE, HartmanReserve.org. Or you can call 319-277-2187. Again, 319-277-2187. The center is located at 657 Reserve Drive, Cedar Falls. And finally, Tuesday, the 5th of December, UNA Holiday Concert Set. Celebrate the joys of the season at the University of Northern Iowa's Holiday Concert. The event is at 7:30 p.m. at the Gallagher Blue Dorm Performing Arts Center in Cedar Falls. UNI School of Music ensembles will perform holiday favorites, winter-inspired works, and more. For tickets, call 319-273-4849. That's 319-273-4849. And we have reached the halftime portion of our broadcast. And I would like to remind you that you are listening to the e-edition reading of The Courier. And this is Thursday, November 30th, the last day of the month. And you are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Services Network for the Blind and the Disabled. About this time, we read the obituary news. So I'm going to do that now, and then we can continue on with other items in the paper. Sue Ann Weldon, age 82, of Iowa Falls, has passed at the Birdhouse in Iowa City on November 25th after a long-fought battle with breast cancer and Alzheimer's. And let me check here to see if we've got services here. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the Birdhouse of Iowa City, Iowa City Hospice. Jerry and Sue Weldon, endowed scholarship fund benefiting non-traditional and low-income students, Calkins Nature Center, or a charity of your choice. Memorial service will be held the 6th of April, 2024, at 11 a.m. at the Iowa Falls First United Methodist Church, followed by a luncheon. And you can also go to www.lensingfuneral.com. That's spelled LensingFuneral.com. Carl Henry Reisner, age 96, has passed at the Mercy One Waterloo Hospital. And let's see, I'm looking to see for services. A memorial service will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Thursday, which is today, actually, at Unity Presbyterian Church of Waterloo, with visitation the hour prior, burial with military honors to follow at Elmwood Cemetery. Condolences may be left at dahlfuneralhome.com. And memorials may be directed to the family. And let's see, Florence M. Shepherd has passed at the age of 98. At Bartels Lutheran Retirement Community in Waverly, Iowa. Here we go. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, December 2nd at the United Methodist Church in Janesville with Pastor Lori Riley officiating. Families will greet friends 1.5 hours prior to the service. Flo will then be cremated, and the burial of her ashes will take place at a future date in Oakland Cemetery in Janesville. If you need more information, you can go to www.kaiserkaisercorson.com, or you can call 319-352-1187. All right, let's see. And then our final one, Karen Neal, age 83, has passed at her home on the 26th of November. And let's see what we've got for services. A memorial service will be held at the St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Waverly on Saturday, December 9th at 11 a.m. with Pastor Dave Effeldent officiating. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. until 11 a.m. service time at the church. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be directed to the family for later destination, and online condolences can also be left at www.kaisercorson.com. and they are assisting. The Kaiser Course and Funeral Group are assisting with the family. And you can reach them, again, at this is for the funeral home, 319-352-1187. That's 319-352-1187. All right. Okay. Let us move on here to the next section of the e-edition reading of the Courier. Let's see. What do we have here? Got a bunch of news here for you. Riverview Center awarded $700,000 for rural services. Money helps sexual assault survivors in rural communities. In Waterloo, an organization providing resources to survivors of sexual assault will now be able to focus more attention on rural residents. The Riverview Center received $700,000 from the Office of Violence Against Women to expand work the nonprofit has already been doing for those abused in rural communities. The money can be spent over 3 years. Executive Director Gwen Bramlett Hecker said that the money will help pay for 2 new positions. A rural coordinator will be dedicated to connecting survivors with resources and expanding the organization's expertise in meeting special challenges in rural communities. Another advocate will also be added to the to provide counseling and support to people who have been sexually assaulted. The money also will allow advocates to travel more. The organization covers 16 counties, 14 in Iowa and 2 in Illinois, but only has offices in 6 counties. The grant money isn't allocated per county, but Riverview tracks cases by zip codes, allowing for services provided for rural cases to be reimbursed. 13 of the 16 counties covered are considered 100% rural. Black Hawk, Dubuque, and Linn counties are not rural, but have many rural communities. The push to focus on rural sexual assault survivors came after Bramlett Hecker read a statistic from the Federal Bureau of Investigation stating that between 1995 and 2015, only 2% of the sexual assaults and rapes in rural areas were even reported to the police. And that was really startling, even to us, even those of us who are in the know and know that there are, you know, unique aspects of rural communities that make it more difficult to report, she says. There are people who decide not to report for all kinds of very, very valid reasons, she continued. But I just know in my heart that more than 2% of these rural communities want to move forward and seek justice. And we want to be able to help facilitate that. Hawkeye Community College board members are sworn in. Among 6 are write-in candidates for 2 seats in Waterloo. Newly elected and re-elected trustees were sworn in on Tuesday to Hawkeye Community College's board. Barbara McGregor, Casey McLaughlin, Jay Nardini, and Lewis Beck were re-elected, while Dave Wesley and Ron Orff were elected to the board after being written in for 2 positions that had no candidates on the ballot. Wesley is a Cedar Falls resident and will represent Director District 4 for a 2-year term. Orff hails from Tripoli and will represent Director District 8 for a 4-year term. Wesley is a familiar face at Hawkeye. He served as both an advisor and later as a director of student services during his 30-year tenure with the college until his retirement in 2018. Wesley decided to run as a write-in candidate after noticing on his sampler ballot that there wasn't anyone set to run in his district. He persuaded his wife, neighbor, and a few friends to vote for him. By the end of the night, he had won his seat with only 7 votes. He felt by campaigning as a write-in candidate that he could help the institution grow in a new way. Wesley said that his role on the board makes him an advocate for community colleges. He noted that community colleges have an enrollment problem and that funding has been an ongoing issue. Okay, let's turn the page. We're still in the Cedar Valley section of the paper. Janesville Senior lauded for cybersecurity skills. Jack Lindemann gets invited to Phoenix for signing day event. Jack Lindemann has a mind for computers, and it's taking him places. The Janesville High School senior first got the bug at young age. He assembled his first computer at 14, affording the pieces by mowing lawns around the neighborhood. That fascination only grew with time and has now resulted in national recognition. Lindemann, who is now taking information technology classes at the Waterloo Caesar Center, was one of four high school students selected for the Cybersecurity Signing Day as part of the National Initiative for Cybersecurity Education in Phoenix. The students will also give presentations and be part of a press conference. It's a teacher's conference, and so they're doing a signing ceremony with very much similar to like a sports signing ceremony, like when you go to West High and they have a kid who signed on to play basketball at UNI, says Kyle Hewlers, Lindemann's teacher at the Career Center. Lindemann plans to go to Hawkeye Community College after graduating to pursue his cybersecurity studies while taking programming classes. According to Lindemann, he is interested in the field of cybersecurity came not long after his interest in computers, starting with a tour of the Career Center. We had a tour here when I was in eighth grade, and we got to see all the different classes. And when I saw cybersecurity, it really caught my eye and was something I was definitely thinking about doing, Lindemann said. Kuehlers explained that Lindemann has become a standout student, pointing to one attribute in particular for his success. Jack's extremely curious. I noticed right away deep interest in computers and cybersecurity and how they operate, Kuehlers said. And so that's kind of what caught my eye. While curiosity may be seen as a detriment in cybersecurity, with inquisitive clicks being the cause of many viruses, Kuehlers said that Lindemann says it's a crucial asset. It lets a programmer think outside the box and anticipate potential traps by hackers. All right. Waterloo Historic Projects with Millions in Tax Credits. Three historic preservation projects in Waterloo were awarded nearly $3 million in tax credits by the Iowa Economic Development Authority. The awards were given through the Historic Preservation Tax Credit Program. Lincoln Savings Bank was awarded almost $1.7 million for its John Deere tractor company, R Building, on the fourth floor. And this project is described as Phase 2, with two commercial tenant suites. JSA Development, LLC, received two awards. The first was $652,612 for the former Waterloo Fire Station number 2. 716 Commercial Street work will include exterior repair and renewal and rehabilitation of the original windows or installation of historically appropriate new windows. The interior space will be converted into new office space and three apartment units. JSA also secured $396,973 to convert the old Baum McDonald Auto Company at 425 Franklin Street into commercial space. With some $20 million available for awards, IEDA received 21 applications requesting over $40 million in tax credits. Projects are scored based on readiness, financing, and local support and participation. Continuing on with Waterloo news, women faces charges in October house fire. A Waterloo woman has been arrested for allegedly setting a fire that spread to a home in October. Waterloo police arrested Kristen Michelle Gullihar, age 38, formerly of Keokuk, on Monday on a warrant for one count of first-degree arson. Bond was set at $50,000. The arrest stems from an October fire at 514 East 2nd Street that started in a trash can behind the duplex at about 2:10 a.m. and spread to the garage and home. The fire caused significant damages to that home. Waterloo man has been charged in a September stabbing. Bond has been set for $10,000. Jacob Wayne Boots, age 33, was arrested Monday for one count of willful injury, causing serious injury. Authorities allege that Boot became involved in an argument outside the Karmer Bar on West 4th Street around 12:45 a.m. on the 16th of September. And during the argument, Boots allegedly punched Tristan Wilson in the face several times and then pulled out a knife and continued the attack with a weapon. According to court records, two women pushed Boots away and he left the area. Wilson suffered stab wounds to his stomach, shoulder, back, and hand. He was treated at a local hospital. At the time, Boots was on supervised release for a 2014 federal gun charge, and his probation officer identified him from a video of the incident, records state. Tickets on sale for Hanson's A Very Dairy Christmas. In Hudson, A Very Dairy Christmas, Hanson's Dairy annual holiday event, is set for December 9th at Hanson's Dairy Tour Center in Hudson. Guests can choose from two sessions, 1 to 2:30 p.m. or 3 to 4:30 p.m. Only 75 tickets will be sold for each session. Tickets are $20 for ages 13 and older, $15 for ages 3 to 12, and free for kids and under. Tickets are available online only at hamsdairy.com. That's hamsendairy.com. This is the Cedar Valley's five-day forecast. Today, freezing fog in the morning, but that pretty much has gone now, and that'll be a high of 44 degrees, and tonight mainly clear, low of 23. On Friday, partly sunny and colder, a high of 37, a low of 23. Saturday, a bit of snow and rain, a high of 37, a low of 27. Sunday, sun and areas of low clouds, high 41, low 23. And the outlook for Monday is partly sunny, ice at night, a temperature of 40 degrees for a high, and 26 at night. National forecast, it's a large area of heavy rain will extend across the south central states today. Within that zone, thunderstorms are expected to turn severe from eastern eastern Texas into much of Louisiana. Steady rain and snow will push along the Pacific Northwest and the northern California coasts, with snow also around the Four Corners. Most other areas will be dry. Well, my goodness, we sure could use that rain, couldn't we? And hopefully we'll get some at some point. All right, let's move on now to the next section of the paper. Okay, we are now in the 360 degrees national and world report section of the paper. Because of the time, I can't read everything here, but the highlights of the front page here says secret recordings reveal thoughts of Russian soldiers. And then there's another one, a look at what's involved in plastic offset credits, because of plastic being such a terrible thing, the way it's been washing up on our shores and in and around the world, actually. Let's take a look here regarding the environment, actually. Fighting hunger, climate change. There's a picture of a gentleman. He's a driver, Carlos Quezada, loads rice on a pallet on the 15th of November for distribution, at Feeding Westchester in Elmsford, New York. Let's take a look at this in Elmsford. When Sean Rafferty got his start in the grocery business, anything that wasn't sold got tossed out. But on a recent day, Rafferty, the store manager for ShopRite of Elmsford Greenberg in New York, was preparing boxes of bread, donuts, fresh produce, dairy products to be picked up by a food bank as part of a statewide program requiring large businesses to donate edible food and, if they can, recycle remaining food scraps. Years ago, everything went in the garbage, to the landfills, the compactors or whatever, you know, wherever it was, said Rafferty, who was 40 years in the industry. And now, over the years, so many programs have developed where we're able to donate all this food, where we're helping people with food insecurities. New York is among a growing number of states targeting food waste over concerns it is tacking up diminishing landfills taking up diminishing landfill space and contributing to global warming as meat, vegetables, and dairy release the greenhouse gas methane after being dumped in a landfill. Rescuing unwanted fruits, vegetables, eggs, cereals, and other foods also helps to feed hungry families. Globally, about a third of the food is wasted. In the U.S., it's even higher, at 40%. Can you believe that? 40%, according to the Harvard Food Law and Policy Clinic. The U.S. spends about $218 billion each year growing and producing food that is wasted. About 63 million tons goes to waste, including 52.4 million tons that ends up in landfills and 10 million tons never harvested from farms. What's shocking to people often is not only how much we waste, but also the impacts that Emily Broad-Lieb, a Harvard University law professor and a director of the school's Food Law and Policy Clinic. Food waste causes about 8 to 10% of global greenhouse gas emissions. And Broadleaf says that 20% of water in the, bear with me, I'm turning the page, in the U.S. is used to grow food that we then just throw away. So we're basically taking water and putting it directly into a landfill. But she and others also know that there's growing awareness of the need to do something about the food waste in the U.S. In 2015, the U.S. Department of Agriculture and Environmental Protection Agency announced a goal of 50% food waste reduction by 2030. This has prompted a number of state-led initiatives along with smaller nonprofit efforts. 10 states and the District of Columbia have passed legislation or executed policies to reduce compost or donate waste. All 50 states have passed legislation shielding donors and recovery organizations from criminal and civil liability linked to donated food. California and Vermont have launched programs converting residents' food waste into compost or energy, while Connecticut requires businesses, including large food wholesalers and supermarkets, to recycle food waste. Farmers in Maryland can get a tax credit for up to $5,000 per farm for food that they donate. Several states have joined New York in setting up systems allowing food to be donated. Rhode Island requires food vendors servicing education institutions to donate any unused food to food banks, while Massachusetts limits the amount of food that businesses can send to landfills, with Broad-Lieb said has increased food donations in the state by 22% over 2 years. New York's program is in its second year, and state officials believe it's having a significant impact. Well, isn't that great? That is really good. I've got just a couple minutes left here, or actually a little less than a minute and a half. Pope still not well in the Vatican City. Pope Francis presided at his weekly audience with the public at the Vatican, but he said that he's still unwell and asked an aide to read his remarks for him on Wednesday, a day after canceling an overseas trip. Francis, who will turn 87 on the 17th of December, had part of one lung removed as a young man, coughed near the end of the hour-long audience in a Vatican auditorium as he made some final comments, then stood up from his chair on the stage to give his blessing. With a soft voice, barely above a whisper, Francis told the public that since I am not well, his reading of his speech wouldn't sound pretty. He then handed the printed speech to the aide. And unfortunately, I have run out of time, and I would like to thank you for listening today. I have been reading the e-edition of The Courier, and this is Thursday, the last day of the month of November, November 30th. And you've been listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Services Network for the Blind and the Disabled. Thank you so much for listening. And my name is Peter Welch, and we will talk again soon. Bye for now.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is EarthDate. Since the dawn of humankind, people have used caves to explore, hold religious ceremonies, create art, or avoid the dangers of weather and predators. Partly because of that, they continue to fascinate scientists today. To create a cave, Mother Nature needs three things: water, rock that can be dissolved by it, and lots of time. Rainwater, as it falls through the atmosphere, picks up carbon from CO2 to become a weak carbonic acid. By the time it hits Earth, it's about as acidic as coffee. As it percolates through the soil, it picks up more carbon from decaying plants, becoming a slightly stronger acid. If the rock below the soil is limestone, gypsum, or dolomite, the water can dissolve along tiny cracks. Over many thousands of years, the cracks become channels, then tunnels, and could eventually become caverns. Water might also mix with hydrogen sulfide gas seeping up from natural oil and gas deposits to form sulfuric acid, which can also dissolve the rock. Protected from daily and seasonal changes on the surface, caves can maintain a stable temperature and humidity. In these delicate environments, the remains of ancient animals and humans, which could have quickly decayed on the surface, have been preserved for millennia. Deeper, more isolated caves have preserved bacteria and microbes undisturbed for millions of years. These qualities make caves important sites for researchers, natural time capsules. There's probably an amazing cave near you, so take a trip and get to know your Earth. I'm Scott Tinker, dissolving mysteries on EarthDate.
EarthDate is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more EarthDate stories at earthdate.org.